Welcome to Travel Market Life, your companion for industry insights and professional business development. Travel Market Life. Join us by webcast, video or podcast.
And welcome to the new Hospitality Monthly Review Show, April 2024 edition, with our panel, Johnny Seabury, Group Revenue Manager at Sarova Hotel Group, Daniel Simmons, CCO of Hotel Rares Hotels and Resorts, and Tibor Katala, CEO at Katala Consulting. In our review shows, we look at the pressing issues in the industry, as well as the landscape in front of us, getting insider knowledge from expert panel and guest interviewees. This is a pretty packed episode full of additional contributors. We'll be tackling the latest developments and news of the sector, changes in service and delivery of guest expectations with Harpreet Singh's Luha, AG Hotels, IHTF, of which Travel Market Life are media partners, and we'll hear from some of the sponsors, and a look at hosted buyer events. Then I'll put my panelists through their paces as we dive into the quick quiz. Disclaimer. All opinions are their own. Before we get started, I'd like to thank you for tuning in. April marks our fourth year, and this podcast is entirely produced and funded by myself. It's fantastic to see listener figures are up. If I can ask, should you enjoy the episode, I encourage you to give it a rating, share it with your colleagues and teams, and repost on LinkedIn. It really does help to continually grow, and hopefully in time I can invest further to make this a real industry community platform and take it out on the road for in-person events. And if you feel you have a story to share, want to be a guest, and have something to say, email us at team@travelmarket.life. So for now, thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Ryan Haynes. Let's get on with the show.
Travel Market Life.
Well, hello, guys. Thank you very much. Welcome back to our episode for April. Starting off with Johnny. How are things going? What have you been up to?
Good afternoon, Ryan. Hi, guys. Things are going okay. Looking forward to the long weekend coming up. On a personal note, on a business note, we've been working hard the last few weeks trying to get our strategies in order and our ducks in a row for the rest of the year, planning for all sorts of eventualities. Really don't know what the market's going to do for the summer and the winter season coming up, so we're putting a few plans A, B, and C in place, depending on how it starts to pan out and what the demand is like. Hopefully, we'll be able to run at plan A. That's the first option. If we get to plan C, something's gone very wrong. But, you know, we're there prepared. We don't know what's going to happen, so we can only just be ready for it. That's what we've been up to, but it's great to be back and to see you guys.
Thank you. And Daniel, Hotel Rares, there is a big milestone this month that you're going to be kicking off celebrations for this year.
We are. Yeah. Hi, Ryan. Hi, everyone. Yes. I mean, it's a really exciting time for us. It's our 20-year anniversary. We're delighted. We're going to have a big party at Southern Stage. And it's a really good time to reflect. I mean, we're so lucky. We've got fantastic clients. Some of them like Hastings Hotels Exclusive, Sarova, of course, John, you know, have been with us for so long. So it's a really good time to look at our clients, really value their business, but also look at our team. I mean, it's all about the people, and we've got such a great team in all different departments. And we've all got the same goal, which is obviously to deliver good service and business to our clients. So, yeah, exciting times ahead.
Well, congratulations. 20 years is certainly no easy feat in this industry, particularly since you need to evolve and adapt so quickly to so much that's changing. So looking forward to celebrating that more with you, Daniel, as the year unfolds. Over to Tibolt then. Welcome back again. So how have things been? What did March have in store, and what's coming up?
Hi, Ryan. Hi, everyone. Very happy to be here as well. March has been quite busy. I've been on the road for back-to-back in March, which is a good news for event and for the industry. I feel like there's a lot of things going on right now. On my side as well, I've been working a lot on research. I'm very curious, let's put it this way, about the future of revenue management and what's going to happen to revenue managers in face of AI and generative AI. Hence why I've been working on a thesis to see what's going to happen. I'm trying to launch it by end of April, May, let's put it this way. So I'm really looking forward to share it with you and everyone as well.
Absolutely. As soon as it's out, we'll make sure it's got a link here of Travel Market Life so people can check out that new white paper. So look forward to receiving and reading that, Thibault. So we've got, as I say, a very packed show ahead of us today. And so we're going to try and reel through it as quickly as possible. Coming up next, the In the News section.
Travel Market Life.
So I've been looking at some of the developments that have been happening in the industry over the last few weeks. There has been a particular article from Skift that I've plucked out. Booking.com ends possibly misleading sustainability program. So a program that was only initiated in 2021 that highlights properties that are standouts in their sustainability practices. Well, they've been removing the badges from the listings because of a response from regulators in the Netherlands. The Travel Sustainable Program, as it was named, scores properties and left green leaves badges. The Netherlands Authority for Consumers Markets said the program was a possibly misleading sustainability claim. Now, that's particularly damaging, especially not perhaps just for booking.com, but for sustainability programs throughout the travel and hospitality industry here. And you know, there's a big push, isn't there, around sustainability. We've seen it high on the agenda at a lot of events and conferences within media publications. I know that, you know, there's so many discussions and presentations, particularly coming up at the International Hotel Technology Forum in and around sustainability. Johnny, if I come to you first, how do you reflect on sustainability practices within the Serova Hotel Group, and how sort of easily achievable is it to actually get these credentials and feel like you're doing something that is transparent and you can put, you know, something like this, a badge and a claim for the properties?
Thanks, Ryan. It's a big priority for us. Has been for a couple of years now. We launched our own internal initiative just over a year ago, which we call Serova Green Key. And we've made a lot of conscientious changes about how we run the business, suppliers that we use, products that we buy, all of these sorts of areas, laundry, linen, cutting down mileage for deliveries and all of these sorts of things. One of the great initiatives that we've done, which I haven't seen in other hotels. I know they exist, but I've never come across them as I've traveled around. But we've changed things like, you know, the paper door hangers that you say do not disturb. We've changed them for wooden ones. Our key cards in two of our hotels have RFID locks. We've now got wooden key cards. They're not plastic anymore. And they're reusable as well. They're not disposable. We've removed all single use, the mini toiletries from the bathrooms. We've put in, it's a pump unit, but it's a very elegant pump unit. It looks good. It's not the tacky ones that you used to get 10 years ago. So it's everything that we do, there's always the second question, does this fit with our Green Key initiative? And if it doesn't, then it's likely it's not something that we're going to follow up with. For booking.com, coming to them, yes, they launched this initiative a few years ago, and it's great. It's all over the place. You're quite right. IHTF and World Travel Market, it's a top agenda. RFPs that have been coming through for corporate accounts in the last couple of years, the sustainability questions on the RFPs, that section is growing and growing every year. 5-6 years ago, there was one question about, do you partake in sustainability practices, yes or no? And you just go, yes, and that was it. But now they want you to list your accreditations and what procedures you do and what's your kilowatt usage in your boilers and all of these sorts of, you know, questions. So it's really important. And the booking.com one, it was very involved. There was a lot of questions in their extranet per property that you had to answer. And they were all relevant, to be fair, to hotels. And actually, you could easily lie if you wanted to, but they were reviewing or comparing your answers to guest reviews And one of the questions that they would ask in a guest review after they say it is, you know, did the hotel have single-use shampoo bottles? If you'd said on your questionnaire that you don't use them anymore, but guests were saying, yes, they did, then Booking.com would, they had some system, would pick this up and they'd come back to you and go, no, we've had a couple of reviews that say you're using single-use plastic, but you said you're not. Can you clarify? So they were checking what you were doing. And I think this whole fuss around their sustainability travel badge, the wording is only misleading when one person reads it differently to everybody else. And I think, you know, prior to that, it was fairly obvious to most people what it was. Some person obviously read it differently and challenged it, and it goes before a board or a court, and then they decide, is it misleading or not? And they have to change it. So they have changed it, but they do still have a tag on the hotel that says sustainability certification.
I mean, it's very confusing, a lot of it. There's so much to it. I mean, in particular with this, booking.com, it's that the program gave a distorted view of hotels because booking.com didn't necessarily provide green leaves green leaves designations, because some properties might be doing other sustainable practices that weren't recognized, which, you know, it just makes it a whole can of worms and so difficult to, I guess, for the industry to come to some sort of standard at the moment. Now, Daniel, within across your properties, I mean, it's an area as well that I believe that you guys are looking at and providing some support with. You know, how important is it from a marketing standpoint?
Do you know, it is so important. I think with the new travelers, the new generation, also with the corporates, you have to be seen to be sustainable friendly, but you have to do it right. So at Hotel Res, when it comes to business travel, we're a member of the BTA, which is like the Business Travel Association. So all hotels can join an organization. It's called Green Gauge. With Green Gauge, there's kind of like an EcoSmart certification that you can carry out. And it's the most reasonable way to do it. Once you've got that, you're allowed to display your award and your accreditation. And that's shown on all the business travel agency screens. And I think it's important because we've got a lot of clients who have got that certification, and you can actually put your rates up. So it's not a case of just the marketing and the exposure and also doing something back, obviously, to the planet. But it's also a good way to increase your ADR. And they went out to the corporates, this one client, and they actually said, if we spend this much to get this award and put all of the funds into it, will you pay an extra 10, 20 pounds per room night? And the corporates actually agreed and said it was, yeah, they would absolutely support it. And I think they're actually getting more market share because of it from those corporates. The other thing as well is everyone wants to be B Corp, but we're actually going for B Corp at the moment. And it's just so confusing and it takes ages. If you're thinking about going B Corp, I'd start the process now because it takes a long time.
It does.
But yeah, it's so important. And if you do it, you have to do it right. So booking.com, obviously, yeah, I don't think they've done it quite right.
I mean, it's interesting because we've spoken to a number of different hoteliers now over the last couple of years looking at sustainability programs, and we speak to eco hotels as well. You know, there are specific channels and online travel agents or your booking portals where you can specifically book hotels that have these sustainability programs in. And it's great to obviously hear that investment that hotels are making is perhaps turning into revenue at the same time. Tybalt, you know, when you're looking at some of this sort of pricing metrics of how you can really optimize that and the credentials of the hotel, how much are you seeing that impact opportunity in the same way that Daniel has just spoken about?
Well, myself, in terms of ROI, it's very hard to say exactly how much revenue we added, because we added some certification on ESG. But I was looking at some reports in preparation for this call, and I've seen some research based on simulation where they compare hotels with certification and hotels without certification and the way they market it, and they found out an increase on the price where people are actually showing the accreditation when it comes to ESG. They were like showing like a plus 14% increase on price just by displaying the ESG certification, and actually a drop of price if you don't show it. So in a way that there's a clear ROI on displaying your accreditation, on displaying your what you do on ESG. And that's why I believe it's very important on your own website to display what you do, to communicate and to educate your guests in-house, but as well before the bookings and even after, but at any touch point. And as well, very important for booking.com on or other OTA to find a way to display those kind of metrics and accreditation, because customers are looking for it. And if you look again back on those research, they are saying like, okay, price is the number one factor where people are looking when deciding different hotels. The second one is concession policy. But the third one, fourth one, and the fifth one are linked to ESG. And we are talking about like between 11 to 12 to 13% influence on the decision of your hotel when it comes to sustainability accreditation, when it comes to sustainable resources, resource management. All of these are new criteria of guests when they look for new bookings. It's just a matter of booking.com to make sure that the KYC is done properly. And it's not just hotel owners or hotel manager to say like, yes, I'm ESG certified, I'm doing great. And currently that was the case. So it was hard to really understand if they were really sustainable or if it was just a greenwashing marketing thing, you know what I mean? So that's why there's some work to be done here.
Excellent. Okay, so moving from a online travel agent to the world of online travel agents, a new record for marketing has been reached in 2023. A staggering $16.8 billion on sales and marketing last year by Expedia Group, Booking Holdings, Airbnb, and Trip.com collectively. That's up 20% on 2022, which is an incredible amount, really, of money that's being pumped in here. Is this for the benefit of brand? Is this for them trying to obviously win back the customers that they lost from the direct bookings that have been made during the pandemic? And what are the opportunities available for hoteliers? If I throw that question over to you, Tibble, how much further, how much more deeper pockets have they got, and how much is that going to affect the hotels?
I think it's also a matter of they just assign a percentage of their revenue. So it's not like that increasing or decreasing. It's just like based on the forecast and based on the revenue, then they will convert that amount on marketing. And same, like, again, we are going back to this conversation about OTA as a big bad boys, and we need to make sure we convert indirect. But those guys are actually making the work for us when it comes to marketing. So my recommendation when it comes to some hotels is to actually piggyback on this, piggyback on those guys spending billions on marketing for you, which is including into your 12, 13, 14, 15% commissions. If you look at brands and you look at your real net RevPAR by channel, and if you add all the management fees, marketing fees, and so on, your net RevPAR on direct bookings on website, direct bookings website, is actually maybe lower than what you get from those guys, because everything is including into your commissions. So I would say like great for them is a continue investing on marketing. That's what their main strength is. And for the hotels, I believe we should piggyback on this.
I mean, you know, when it comes to these online portals, you know, they do spend a significant portion of their revenue on marketing. Trip.com, for example, the spending was 26% of revenue in 2019, 21% in 22, and down to 20% in 2023. So they've actually decreased the amount. But obviously, as you say, their revenue has been going up. Daniel, you know, you work with a number of soft brands as well, and there is that opportunity you're working with hoteliers to improve their visibility online. When you look at sort of that expenditure, yeah, and how much revenue or percentage of revenue, how do you sort of provide that level of advice as to what is the right level of investment hotels should be making in their marketing channels?
I mean, I think all hotels want as much business as possible from their own booking engines. I mean, they want that to be the number one channel, but it is difficult, especially when you read about how much these global brands are spending on the marketing. And I think what's more worrying is these brands, these global Expedias of booking.com, it's so difficult to compete with them. So all the hotels have to make sure they have some meta presence, whether it's with Trivago or Kayak or even TripAdvisor, but you'll always be competing against all these big players, which is really hard. I mean, you can go for the acquisition or the click scenario, but getting it all adds up. And then when it comes to your SEO and your web presence. I mean, so it's not just the cost of the actual booking through the websites, everything else you're doing on the digital basis. When you look at the marketing spend that all these big players are spending, it's not just on their exposure, getting first on the list when you go on the web. I think a lot of it is also the commissions that they're paying to their new B2B partners. So, of course, they started off, it was all consumer business, but, you know, now it's all, you know, all the partnerships they've got with all the B2B players. And that includes travel agents, corporations, self-booking tools. So they're just getting bigger and bigger. And a lot of it is to do with the amount they're spending.
Now, Johnny, I mean, how do you view it as a hotelier?
It used to be frustrating, but now we accept it as a nature of the beast, and it's just a part of doing business. But I mean, these guys, Thibaut is absolutely right. They have a percentage of the revenue that they allocate to these marketing activities, and if they weren't making the revenue, then the spend would be less. But let's be honest, if there was no return off it, they wouldn't spend it. So clearly they're getting the return, and therefore they're spending it. And it just snowballs from there. They spend a bit more, they make more revenue, so they've got a bit more to spend. But I think it's also, we've got to look at where they're spending the money. And let's be honest, the biggest channel by far is Google. Google are cashing in on it as well. They know full well that the more they develop their marketing tools and capabilities and algorithms, the more they can entice the channels to spend with them. And they'll come up with new ideas. Let's go back years ago, and you had the old-fashioned pay-per-click model, like Google Ads, and that was it. But now you've got a plethora of advertising mediums on Google with the pricing ads and all of these sorts of avenues. And of course, Google are developing these all the time to get more money, and the channels are spending it. And so we just think, you know, if you've got the budget, let them do it. You're better at it than we will ever be. So knock yourselves out. And we pay them enough commission, so they need to spend it somewhere.
That's true. That's very true, yes. Right, okay. So in February's edition, we looked at corporate and business travel, and there's been some developments in that part of the industry. Amex GPT buys rival CWT for $570 million. Absolutely incredible deal that's been made here. Daniel, I know this actually, I saw this pop up on one of your LinkedIn posts. So obviously it's an important development here for you in the industry. How are you viewing this?
I mean, we've got fantastic relationships with both TMCs. And we kind of went through this before, because I remember when Amex bought HRG, and it was the same kind of talk in the industry. And all the hoteliers and all the people that were in the programs were like gathered together. And the transition took years. So I think any transition with merging the two companies is going to take a while. These big TMCs, though, I mean, it's all to do with economies of scale. They just want more and more clients. And I think this purchase is going to get them 4,000 new clients. And then, of course, the more you get new clients, the more the cost is like scaled down, so you get higher levels of profitability. My only concern with the clients is just the buying power they're going to have, because it's just going to be, I mean, they're just going to be the biggest TMC out there. So when it comes to the RFP side of it, I think they can be a bit more demanding than they are already. But we'll just have to watch this space. But I can understand why they've done it.
Daniel mentioned exactly that they bought Hogs back in 2018. 3 years later, in 2021, they bought Egencia. And 3 years later, they've now bought CWT. You know, if they're not careful, they're going to become a monopoly and get told off by somebody. But, you know, who is left? There's BCD or Flight Center. You know, they're Flight much centers. Smaller players, and they'll get swallowed up if they take their eye off the ball. So, yeah, it's a big deal. I'm not as close to them as Daniel is. We deal more with the client who deals with the TMC than we deal with the TMC ourselves. But yeah, it's becoming a big monster.
I can confirm what you're saying, Daniel, and we are already seeing this kind of trend. Some companies during the RFP process are becoming much more demanding, and they impose their rules, and it's non-negotiable. Mm. So everything is last room availability. The first year ever, maybe I mentioned this last time, but first year ever when I received some RFP for a period of 6 years. So it was like, take it or leave it. That's for the next 6 years. All right. I don't know what's going to happen in 6 months. So 6 years, I have no confidence, even less. But now, those kind of companies, they are so big and so important that they dictate the rules and they dictate the market.
Just going to say, those big TMCs, they're very much like the top NASDAQ, the FTSE 100 companies. And they're actually, I think, traveling less or staying less. So all these SME, small to medium-sized businesses are going more with like the travel perks and the Navans. And that's, I think, where these big TMCs are a bit nervous with all these new players. So to increase their business and get to these higher levels of profitability, I think they have to do it by taking over the other TMCs. But yeah, it's a changing landscape all the time, as John said. Who are they going to buy next?
And this is why I have my expert panel to come in here and give us the insider information, particularly on what's going on in the news. Thank you, you three, on that. We are going to be moving over to our lead topic today, service and delivery, where first we'll have an interview with Harpreet Singh Saluja, the Director of Central Operations at AG Hotels, just after this.
Travel Market Life.
Travel Market Life is backed by Haynes Marcoms, a B2B marketing communications PR consultancy specializing in the technologies, travel, hospitality, and property sectors. Create meaningful connections and visibility to grow. Haynes Marcoms cuts through the noise to resonate with target buyers, decision makers, and influencers. From contextualizing your mission to positioning your value proposition, Haynes Marcoms helps you address the issues that matter. Marketing, PR, and social. Build profile, gain momentum, shape strategy with Haynes Marcoms.
Travel Market Life.
Okay, joining me now is Harpreet Singh Saluja, the Director of Central Operations at AG Hotels. Harpreet, thanks ever so much for sharing your insights here with us today as we discuss service and delivery. Really like to sort of tackle sort of what you're seeing and seeing happening within the hotels and operations over the last few years and perhaps how that looks back on maybe 10 or 20 years ago. What are the biggest challenges you're seeing in operations today?
I think the biggest challenge compared to what 10 to 20 years ago, more so now, is the cost of living crisis, where I think it's impacting every single business, and not just hospitality, but hospitality more so because it's a people's industry. I think the biggest challenge you see is to deliver the profit or bottom line, and where you start cutting corners. I would say cutting corners, but the operational efficiency is the right word. You look at how you can deliver the operations, i.e. your food delivery to your reception delivery with less number of people. And then that's where it comes by multitasking your people. And I think the multitasking is the word which has been used quite often now in the industry. And we see more so with operations, you see challenges with people as well. Like people aren't there after Brexit and COVID. The talent isn't there in the industry, i.e. your chefs are missing. So people are looking at how we cut down on our go down to our chef-less kitchens with delivering food from frozen to cooked, which is a good quality food, but without chefs. So these are one of the efficiencies driven, whereas you see a front office person now checking in people, serving on the bar, and then after that cooking this frozen food as well. So it's all those things I've seen changing over the period now.
That's absolutely fascinating. I mean, obviously, to see that people's roles have really become incredibly varied and really quite packed within a day, that they have so many responsibilities to fulfill. But now, looking at guest expectations, is that becoming more difficult to meet? How are you seeing those evolve?
I wouldn't, I'll give you an example. And this is a very recent example. I was in Turkey and I could see a resort full of so many employees serving so less people, whereas if you were to reverse that in the UK, you see a lot of guests with one single employee trying to serve all these people. So the expectation is there because people are paying. They want that service because hotels are meant to be a better space than your home, And if you're paying for the service and if you're not getting the service, they expect it. Somewhere people feel disappointed. So it's kind of a necessity to stay in a hotel. That's why people are staying and they're accepting the changes because it is a limited service, food, limited service hotel, limited service. Or even if you were to stay in a four-star hotel, you are still getting you're not still getting that same level of service which you used to get 10, 12, 20 years ago, which was still limited at that time, but now it's more limited now. I think the guests have adapted to the changes in the market space. They know it's expensive to stay in a hotel, but they go with the expectation low. You can see from the review scores as well, they are not so bad these days. So, yeah, I think guests have adapted to the market conditions, I would say.
Wow, that's really interesting that you're actually seeing that play out in your guest reviews. Now, when it comes to staffing, you mentioned this challenge that you've got around finding the right talent and having a big enough pool. But when you do get new staff coming into the hospitality environment, how does their understanding of service and delivery sort of match or potentially jar with what guest expectations have?
So I think it again boils down to the people you have in the leaders you have in your business, how they portray the business, how passionate they are. 9 out of 10 times what happens is it's a knee-jerk reaction. If somebody's looking to leave, if they're half decent, you can promote them, but are they ready to be a leader yet? It's the question you ask. So depending on what leadership team you create within the business, how passionate they are for the industry, how passionate they are for delivering a good job, I think it's the culture within the business you create, and that's how you see the new recruits following the culture through. We have got multiple sites. We see a site which has got a great leader, an employee who joins in at a very base level, who has got no knowledge, can become a great asset to the business. And whereas if you see a wrong leader, and you even if you were to give them a right candidate who has got all the right attitude to learn, but is not being trained properly, you lose that asset as well. So it's pretty much dependent on the business leaders you have in your business.
I mean, I was just reading an article the other day that we're seeing a lot more people entering into leadership roles who are too junior for those roles, but they've got no one else to turn to. What would you see is the best way, if you are in that situation, that you can train staff most effectively or identify the right people who perhaps have the leadership capabilities but don't necessarily have the level of experience to execute that well?
I think there are a lot of support available, which as a business we are turning to as well. Government is doing this apprenticeship scheme level, ILM levels. So we have, I think, signed up a lot of our junior leaders into those leadership management courses, which I learned personally myself in my earlier career. Those courses do help. Offsite trainings do help, giving them the right support. Plus, we are building up our own LMS platform as well, which is a backup tool. So if somebody wants to learn how to check in a guest, we have a video available for someone to go and check it, understand that video, because younger generation do tend to be more digital these days. So I think adapting with market changes as well, we are developing a online platform.
Now, what about your wish list then to make operations easier? What would it be to really sort of like bring and deliver that change you need in guest services and providing efficient operations within a hotel?
I think the ultimate wish list to any operator would be is the stigma which is that is hospitality is not the greatest career. So I think promoting hospitality in much more brighter light within I think UK would be or Europe would be a greater thing. That would be my first thing. And second thing is I think the owners who are buying hotels and looking at purchasing hotels as a business, I think they should think hospitality is still the core of hotels, not just an asset where they just buy it and squeeze every single penny out of it, because hospitality was meant to be a greatest service industry rather than just a money-making business. And plus, I think looking at some leaders in the business, like what you are doing as well, is promoting hospitality via your platforms, having some more people coming in and promoting hospitality in a greater light. I think that would help the industry immensely.
If I can just go back to what you were saying about apprenticeships, I've been speaking to quite a few people across the travel and hospitality industry over the last few months, and there is a lot more focus on apprenticeships. Obviously, we've seen an explosion in a number of people going to university, but is that actually delivering the level of experience and knowledge that's required to work in hotels? Apprenticeships are giving that sort of very practical on-the-ground experience at the same time that's supported by government. Are you seeing that there's more acceptance and understanding that apprenticeships now are part of the industry? Was that something that was lost for a while?
I 100% agree. I think it's becoming more and more part of the industry now because A, it's been funded, and B, government is trying to support the industry one way or the other. So I think it's becoming more and more part of the hospitality as we go along.
Excellent. Harpreet, thank you ever so much for joining us today.
Lovely. Thank you very much.
So that was Harpreet Singh Saluja, the Director of Central Operations at AG Hotels. I mean, he gave some great insight as to, as a portfolio prop company, you know, some of the challenges that they're facing there. Johnny, I know that this was a particular topic of interest to you to want to sort of explore that little bit further. You know, how does that sort of resonate with some of the experiences that you're having there at Serova Hotel Group and how you're addressing those challenges?
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. Harpreet definitely hit the nail on the head on a few of the key words you mentioned there, such as talent, finding the right talent for the right roles is incredibly difficult. Multi-skilling is becoming a necessity now, where people are able to move from one area, one department to another and just diversify the roles. And leading by example as well. You need management who can do the job, not sit in an office and bark at other people and tell them to do the job. You need to show them how to do it and demonstrate what is the level of service expected for the, you know, the style of property that, that you're running. But recruitment at the moment is still a big problem. It's better than it was 18 months ago, but it's still very difficult to recruit people. Even getting applications in when you post job ads now is, it's just heartbreaking. And the kind of responses you get are just so unsuitable for the role that you're advertising. So getting people who are actually interested in doing the job is, you know, priority number one, not necessarily experience, because you can get experience, still be rubbish at the job. We want the people who can actually demonstrate that they can do the job and are interested in doing the job and enjoy delivering the service. So, yeah, talent, multi-skilling, and just lead by example. I think that's the three key areas to become successful.
I mean, what I'm getting on, getting through all these conversations that I'm having and the challenges in recruitment and finding the right people and having the right structures is this culture that hospitality needs a complete rebrand. There needs to be a lot more sort of drive around sort of exciting people to see the opportunities available within hospitality, because of the way that it was squashed during the pandemic. It was almost like that was just a full stop for so much of the industry and for so many people. I mean, you're struggling to get chefs in restaurants, you know, where's the pride gone? Do you feel, Johnny, that potentially comes down that there's too many investors in the industry now and not enough independent owners who are actually taking, who highly regard the profession of the industry?
I don't know, Ryan. I've never really considered that angle of it, but whether it's, you know, an independently owned or it's a corporation owned or an investor owned or however, at the end of the day, there's still a GM in the hotel who has to run that business, and he has to recruit, or she, sorry, he or she has to recruit his chefs and so on. And if the chefs aren't there to apply for the jobs, they're not there to apply for the jobs. It doesn't matter who owns the building. At the end of the day, they all vanished in lockdown. I don't know where they went. Everybody just vanished. I think they're all doing Amazon deliveries now or something like that. I don't know, but
I believe the issue we are talking about right now, it's something we as an industry, we created in the first place. You know, it's the same situation when people were complaining about Uber disrupting the taxi industry. But people said, yes, they're stealing jobs for taxi drivers and so on. but you should see like taxi drivers, or they were treating people in the first place in Paris or in London. They were like, they were dictating everything, and they were kind of asking to be disrupted in the first place. And I believe the hotel industry was the same. Like we didn't, some industry like as a whole, again, I'm not pointing finger at anyone, but they didn't care much about exactly what you mentioned, chefs being barked at, or like saying like, okay, you don't know to handle like a plate and so on, then and you go out. So people have started to be, it was an industry that needs to be disrupted. And now we're saying, oh yeah, but where are they gone? They don't want to raise a pride, where and so on. But we created this kind of situation in the first place, you know what I mean? And now we are back at it saying like, we should have cared about maybe work-life balance in the first place to make the industry actually as attractive as possible in the first place. And I believe this kind of trend of only focusing on investment, only focusing on making money and reducing the cost, then we have been asking the industry to be disrupted. So now we are back and we should find the right balance between ROI, data-driven, tech, and so on, but as well human-to-human connection and taking care of your employees and making the industry great again. That sounds like Trump, but making sure we need to find some exciting way to motivate new students and employees to go back in the industry.
Excellent. Now, I mean, a McKinsey article, very interestingly, I don't think they've quite got the gist of the problem, but their solution is assume the role of chief culture officer, hire for personalities, not resumes, if you've got actually people who are applying for these roles, invest in celebrating and rewarding employees, enable a distinctive customer experience, empower staff to gain knowledge of customer preferences if they have the time for the learning and development programs for that, trust staff with budget, especially with rectifying missteps, if again, you know, you have your time to train them, regularly reinvent the customer experience, go to extra lengths to create unique memories. Again, you know, a huge amount of investment in training and development and having the right people on site, and manage performance without skimping on quality. You know, a great blueprint. Thank you, McKinsey. But I think until you're actually working in a hotel, a lot of those things seem near-eye impossible. Right, coming up next, we're going to be having conversations with the sponsors of IHTF, the International Hotel Technology Forum.
Travel Market Life.
Joining me now is Philip von Ditfurt, the co-founder of Appaleo. Philip, thanks ever so much for joining us. So you just announced the rollout of Appaleo as a PMS migration and deployment within Citizen M. What was so unique about this news?
I think it was one of our biggest rollouts. It spanned over 34 hotels, which had to be migrated across three continents, more than 10 countries and more than 20 cities. Citizen M is well known for its advanced use of technology coming from various suppliers and comprising many components that were built in-house. So it was also quite a good and complex project. It was also the intention to run it as a perfectly orchestrated migration of a full technology stack, which should happen at an incredible pace. So It led to a program which was running at an incredible speed. We switched the whole portfolio in less than 10 weeks. So at a speed the industry had not seen before. And at the same time, it was, as intended, a structured exercise, pretty risk-free. It went very smooth. And yeah, some might even call it a dull exercise at the end. So it really went very well. And that what made this whole program very unique.
Fantastic. That's great to hear. Now, you're also going to be a sponsor for the International Hotel Technology Forum this year, and you're going to be doing a fireside with Citizen M. Why is this going to be such an important conversation for the hoteliers attending?
You know, there's still such an anxiety when it comes to the change of important pieces in a hotel chain's tech stack. Many larger chains still claim that they are almost not able to change their property management. And we want to show that it is possible and that it can be a well-managed and well-executed exercise. And this is why we will explain what are the most important pieces in the setup and the preparation of such a program and how it can be run very smoothly. So we will touch all those important aspects of a large program, mainly to show larger hotel chains that such a program is doable and that it can be successful and very fast at the same time.
So a first-hand user account, experience account, or someone who's been through that before. How should hoteliers be thinking differently about their tech stack today?
I think the main mind shift is to move away from closed systems to real open platform approaches like Apaleo with its API-first platform architecture. It allows to be way more flexible in the setup and in the maintenance of Brand.com's tech stack. On the other side, property management should be focused on transactions, reservations, payments, and maybe not so much on other domains like sales and catering and profile management. So in essence, sometimes to do less is better, but then assemble the tech stack with a platform and best of breed applications. And this is also a story we will touch during our fireside chat.
Now, this isn't your first time at IHTF. The Apaleo team have attended before. What value does your business get from being at the event and sponsoring?
What we highly appreciate, first of all, is the very strict focus on hotel tech. So it's not a generic hospitality talk. It's all about hospitality tech. The way it is organized with pre-selected and organized meetings. So you know exactly whom you can talk to, what the parties are. A little bit also get an idea of their main areas of interest. And this is where we get the most value out of IHTF. And finally, the panels which are organized and the sessions in between, all the content which is presented is again very focused, typically highlights some new developments in hotel tech. And so every IHTF is also a good learning event for the participants as well as those who kind of engage in the event.
Excellent. Philip, thank you very much. I look forward to meeting you and spending some time with you in person in Barcelona at the IHTF this year.
Looking forward to. Thank you very much for having me here.
Joining me on the line now is another one of our sponsors for IHTF, Carlos Calvo, the head of sales at Proper Sales. Carlos, thanks ever so much for joining us today. So when it comes to the topic that you're going to be presenting at IHTF, you're going to be looking at modernizing bookings for groups and MICE business. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, hi, Ryan. Thank you for sharing this time with me and letting me explain more about it. So yes, what we do at Proper Sales is that we modernize the booking experience for groups and MICE. I can tell you that this tool is really interesting. I started 3 weeks ago in this company. Before, I've also worked in the hotel side, especially in the sales and MICE department. So I can only say one thing. I would have loved to have this tool when I was working in hotels, because it would optimize so much time and it would leave me time to do other things that are really interesting also in the department. So I can win a lot of time with this tool.
Excellent. Wonderful. I mean, coming from that hotelier experience, you really get a good understanding of some of the challenges of digitalizing many aspects within the hotel. Why is it that Proper Sales is attending and sponsoring IHTF?
Well, we think that IHTF, it's a great forum to meet with hoteliers. At the end, the feeling that we have right now is not the feeling. What we're receiving right now is a lot of requests and leads, and our clients are coming mainly from top accounts. So I think it's the time also to meet with the C-level people from the top accounts, so we can also introduce them what their hotels are doing right now. It's working with Proper Sales, and we want to have the chance to also meet with them.
I mean, it's a hosted buyer event, and you actually have time, 30 minutes or so, to spend with buyers, a one-to-one meeting. What is the value you get from these type of events compared to trade shows and other type of conferences?
I mean, I think that is something amazing to have the chance to speak one-to-one to those hoteliers, get to explain a bit more. And also, as I said, those C-level people that are working at a top accounts, that is our main target in this moment, as we do have integration with Opera Cloud in this sense, in two-way integration. And we know that many of the top accounts also are working with Opera Cloud. So we want to have a chance to meet them. As I said before, no, many of those hotels, of those main accounts, are asking and requesting leads from us. And I think it's really interesting that they get to know us also a bit more from the headquarters and explain them about us.
I mean, we've been fortunate enough to interview your colleague Juiced in the past about proper sales and its position in the market, and particularly about the growth in group and MICE bookings. And when it comes to hoteliers looking at their digitalization strategies and their tech stack and incorporating something like proper sales, what is it that they should be thinking about in that journey?
Well, they should be thinking, first of all, in optimizing time. No, what we know and what we've seen, and also, again, based in my experience when I was a hotelier, is that you optimize a lot of time. I mean, right now we know that hotels are really struggling with people, no, that they have in their team. So we need to help them. No, and I think that we've been many years sending PDFs. And I think it's the time to modernize the way that we send proposals, no? And with proposals, we are helping them a lot to optimize that time.
Excellent. Carlos, I look forward to meeting you in person and having a proper conversation in Barcelona.
Oh, me too, Ryan. It will be great to meet you there.
Joining me now is Carsten Fernet, the chief executive of Seahoot, which is also sponsoring at the IHTF. Hi there, Carsten. Thanks ever so much for joining me today. So the subject of your presentation is digitalization. Why is it such an important topic for hotels still?
So basically, even while during the pandemic, the industry has got a big push into digitalization. So a lot of our customers are struggling with that digitalization strategy because IT still seems to be complex, and then they don't have a lot of IT skills internal. And while big players in the industry use consulting firms or basically have an armada of IT staff internal to define their strategy, I argue that smaller players and even individual hotels should not fear the digitalization or a digitalization project. And this is really what I will explain and why and how they can drive into this direction.
No, I mean, it's not an overnight success. You're not just going to switch and you're going to be there arriving at the new world of digital hotel. So what is a journey like for hotels, and how have they successfully gone about achieving that digitalization strategy within their properties?
Look, I guess basically digitalization can be at various levels, and you can look into all aspects of a hotel where you can use digitalization. And we have a lot long history and worked with a lot of customers and also with the big players and implemented a lot of strategies in terms of back office automation and others. And that's really what we take to the next level and help even the smaller customers to participate on that.
Now, Seahoot has been in the market for over 35 years as a property management system. How do you differ from some of the new players that are coming into the marketplace?
Oh, I know a lot of faces. I think we are like one of the most complete suites if it comes to like capabilities, function sets. So we have a very function-rich product. Being really coming through a long evolution, I'd say. We served markets from city properties to leisure properties in a lot of countries, big and small. I think that is really the thing. We have a wide range of capabilities and adaptabilities, I think.
And when it comes to hotels looking at streamlining their IT, what are the opportunities to drive those greater efficiencies?
So, can you say that again?
For hotels looking to streamline their IT, where are the opportunities for them to drive greater efficiencies?
you know, like I was saying, there are a lot of areas that they can thrive. And like I was mentioning the automation of back office systems already, and maybe I should give that more of an example. Take an example, the booking engine of Module One. That's not a CEOT product. It's a third-party product that is integrated using our APIs. And there is a payment capability inside of the booking engine. And some of the aspects that I think about digitalization is like a lot of taking off the repetitive tasks from the customers. And one of the things that you can do to really drive your efficiency is like make your back office and accounting operations more efficient. And coming back to my example, we basically receive the payments. We automate the invoice process so that the customer gets his invoice immediately from the PMS where the invoice should come from. But we're also receiving all of the references from the payments into the PMS that in turn is then provided in the accounting data feeds that go into the accounting software. And that is then automatically matched with the extracts that are coming from the PSP, like the payment service provider. And there is a lot of repetitive, boring tasks you can automate and reduce so that you can actually really value your guests more and be a good host.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Now, you're attending IHTF. You are a regular attendee there and a sponsor. What value do you get from the event?
Look, I think we're not alone on the industry. We're not alone in the world. And so I like going to IHTF because it's a great possibility to talk to our partners, connect with new ones, but of course also talk to hoteliers interested in ITs and find new trends and capabilities. Innovation comes never from the internal. So therefore, conferences like IHTF are great value to get new ideas and inspiration.
Excellent. Carsten, thank you ever so much for joining me today.
Not a problem. Thank you for having me.
Travel Market Life.
So, sure. Johnny, we've just heard from our sponsors there for the IHTF. You're going to be there again, and obviously we see each other every year at these events. What are you particularly looking forward to?
Same thing every year, really. This is my ninth time at IHTF. It would have been my 11th, but something got in the way for a couple of years. But the things I really look forward to is catching up with acquaintances and colleagues and friends from around the industry, around the world, that you don't get to see very often. And also catching up with what's changed, what's developed, what's new, what's the buzzword in, you know, technology for our industry and moving forward. Where should we be focusing our energies and our efforts and our investment on that side of the equation? So it's a social event, but it's also a business event, and it's a good couple of days out, and you need a little holiday when you get back. But I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be a good event this year, I think.
Yeah, I mean, let's put people in a picture just to give people an idea of what we're actually talking about here. So the IHTF is held in different cities. This year it's in Barcelona. It's a 2.5-day program, of which it's full of presentations from hoteliers and sponsors looking at developments and case studies and success stories of the way they've used technology and digitalized parts of their operations, marketing and distribution. And then in between, there's about an hour and a half, about three or four hour and a half sessions throughout the day with business meetings, which last 30 minutes, and a hotelier is matched with a sponsor. Johnny, you know, what's the value you get from sitting down for 30 minutes with some of these sponsors?
I've had quite a few eye-opening moments with these sponsors at the events, where they tell you about the products that they're developing and they're offering, and you sit there and go, oh my God, why have I never heard of this before? Or have you got two? You know, I don't want to buy one, I want two. But I can go to this event and I've got a room with, I don't know how many are there, 50 or 60 tables at least. And for sure, you're going to meet somebody at that event who's got a product, and probably a couple of people who've got a product or a solution that is right for your business. And and you develop a relationship from there.
Right then, we have come to the end of our feature focuses now, and we're going to be moving on to the quick quiz. Gentlemen, do you have your buzzers at the ready?
Yes. Travel Market Life.
Okay, so we are back for the quick quiz, best of five, where our panelists are challenged on their industry knowledge. A must-have in any hotel room. This in-room feature was only first installed in 1974. What is it? Yes, Tibol.
A phone.
Phone, no. Johnny.
Remote control colour TV.
1974, no. Daniel.
Was that a trouser press?
Oh, you guys are absolute rubbish, aren't you? It's a hotel minibar. Okay, moving on to the next question. Now, this some of these questions are a bit left field today. I was obviously in a funny mood when I was coming up with them. Right, are we ready? Number two. What famous line did Greta Garbo utter in the 1932 MGM film Grand Hotel?
Oh.
Go on, not Johnny. Be,
have him washed and sent to my room.
I saw it years ago. I've no idea. Sorry.
I haven't got a clue.
I want to be alone.
Right. Complete opposite of my answer then.
Yeah. Next question. Consisting of 5,005 rooms, which Las Vegas hotel was the world's largest when it opened in November 1993?
Was that...
Yes, Daniel?
Was it Caesar's Palace?
No. Johnny?
Bellagio? The Bellagio?
No.
Oh. No, oh.
The MGM you just mentioned.
MGM.
Oh,
yes.
MGM.
Oh, well done. Tibol on 1 point, 0 to the others. Right, next one. Okay. Let's see if you get this one. How many houses do you need to build a property before you may buy a hotel in the UK and US versions of the board game Monopoly? How many? Yes, Tibol.
Four.
You do. Four. Two to Tibol. Oh. Well done. Go on. Is he going to storm through now?
No.
Right. Next and last question. Which group had a massive late 1976 hit with their release of Hotel California?
Oh.
Daniel.
Was it the Beach Boys?
No,
I'm terrible at this.
Johnny.
I can't think it's gone from here. The Drifters.
Hotel California. No.
Drift, I can't remember. The song. No, I had it on a
song. No, it was the Daniel. Eagles.
The Eagles. No.
A classic tune. Terrible. All right. So industry questions don't really get you any points, and nor do these random cultural questions to do with hotels either. So I hope you guys at home have been listening in and won many more points than our three experts, who have perhaps just proven they're not quite as expert as I'd hoped. But Johnny, Tibol, Daniel, thank you ever so much for joining us today for the April edition of the Hospitality Review Show.
Thank you, guys. Great to see you again. Look forward to next time.
Thank you so much.
Cheers, Ryan. Bye-bye.
Thanks ever so much for listening in to the Hospitality Review Show here on Travel Market Life. Please check out more of our episodes that are coming soon, as well as our Hoteliers Voice Season 4. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Ryan Haynes.
For more, go to Travel Market Life. The Music Sensation by Zach Nelson is reproduced under license from Storyblocks. Travel Market Life is a Haynes Marcom's digital marketing agency production, serving the travel and technology industries.